We're going to be reading the 27th and the 28th chapter of Exodus, Shemot. But before we go there, there's a quiz. What was the first item that God said He wanted made?
The ark.
The ark. What was the second item God wanted to make? Which is called the what? Called the mercy seat. We'll have to break in then. I'm going to write on the blackboard what that word really is in Hebrew so you can kind of get used to that. What was the third thing? No, caribbeans meet with the ark. Nope. The table. Now, that's the third thing in line that had to be made. And it's kind of interesting why it has to be a third thing in line. And, of course, the last thing was the menorah. All right? Now, in the next two chapters, we're going to deal with another series of things that He wishes to be done in a sequence of time. In other words, He tells you how to do it. And He goes into great detail. So, I want a reader for Exodus 27 and 28. The 28 is pretty long, so you'll have to endure it. All right?
27. You shall make an altar of acacia wood, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. The altar shall be square, and its height shall be 3 cubits. You shall make its horns on its 4 corners. Its horn shall be of 1 piece with it, and you shall overlay it with bronze. Also you shall make its pans to receive its ashes, and its shovels, and its basins, and its forks, and its fire pans. You shall make all its utensils of bronze. You shall make a grate for it, a network of bronze, and on the network you shall make 4 bronze rings at its 4 corners. You shall put it under the rim of the altar beneath, that the network may be midway up the altar. And you shall make poles for the altar, poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with bronze. The poles shall be put in the rings, and the poles shall be on the 2 sides of the altar to bear it. You shall make it hollow with boards. As it was shown you on the mountain, so shall they make it. You shall also make the court of the tabernacle. For the south side there shall be hangings for the court made of fine woven linen, 100 cubits long for 1 side, and its 20 pillars and their 20 sockets shall be bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands shall be silver. Likewise, along the length of the north side there shall be hangings 100 cubits long, and its 20 pillars and their 20 sockets of bronze, and the hooks of the pillars and their bands of silver. And along the width of the court on the west side shall be hangings of 50 cubits, and there 10 pillars and there 10 sockets. The width of the court on the east side shall be 50 cubits. The hangings on one side of the gate shall be 15 cubits, with their 3 pillars and their 3 sockets. And on the other side shall be hangings of 15 cubits, with their 3 pillars and their 3 sockets. For the gate of the court there shall be a screen 20 cubits long, woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen made by a weaver. It shall have 4 pillars and 4 sockets. All the pillars around the court shall have bands of silver. Their hooks shall be of silver, and their sockets of bronze. The length of the court shall be 100 cubits, the width 50 throughout, and the height 5 cubits, made of fine woven linen, and its sockets of bronze. All the utensils of the temple for all its servants, all its pegs, and all the pegs of the court shall be bronze. And you shall command the children of Israel that they bring you pure oil of pressed olives for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually. In the tabernacle of meeting, outside the veil which is before the testimony, Aaron and his sons shall tend it from evening until morning before the Lord. It shall be a statute forever to their generations on behalf of the children of Israel. 28. Now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as priest, Aaron and Aaron's sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And you shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother, for glory and for beauty. So you shall speak to all who are gifted artisans, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister to me as priest. And these are the garments which they shall make: a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a skillfully woven tunic, a turban, and a sash, so that they may make holy garments for Aaron your brother and his sons, that he may minister to me as priest. They shall take the gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and the fine linen. And they shall make the ephod of gold, purple, blue, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen, artistically worked. It shall have two shoulder straps joined at its two edges, and so it shall be joined together. And the intricately woven band of the ephod, which is on it, shall be of the same workmanship, made of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen. Then you shall take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel, six of their names on one stone and six names on the other stone, in order of their birth, with the work of an engraver in stone, like the engravings of a signet. You shall engrave the two stones with the names of the sons of Israel. You shall set them in settings of gold. And you shall put the two stones on the shoulders of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel. So Aaron shall bear their names before the Lord on his two shoulders as a memorial. You shall also make settings of gold, and you shall make two chains of pure gold like braided cords, and fasten the braided chains to the settings. You shall make the breastplate of judgment, artistically woven according to the workmanship of the ephod. You shall make it of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen. You shall make it. It shall be doubled into a square. A span shall be its length, and a span shall be its width. And you shall put settings of stones in it, four rows of stones. The first row shall be a sardius, a topaz, and an emerald. This shall be the first row. The second row shall be a turquoise, a sapphire, and a diamond. The third row, a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst. And the fourth row, a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper. They shall be set in gold settings. And the stones shall have the names of the sons of Israel, 12 according to their names, like the engravings of a signet. Each one with its own name, they shall be according to the 12 tribes. You shall make chains for the breastplate at the end, like braided cords of pure gold. And you shall make two rings of gold for the breastplate, and put the two rings on the two ends of the breastplate. Then you shall put the two braided chains of gold in the two rings which are on the ends of the breastplate, and the other two ends of the two braided chains you shall fasten to the two settings, and put them on the shoulder straps of the ephod in the front. You shall make two rings of gold and put them on the two ends of the breastplate, on the edge of it, which is on the inner side of the ephod. And two other rings of gold you shall make, and put them on the two shoulder straps, underneath the ephod toward its front, right at the seam, above the intricately woven band of the ephod. They shall bind the breastplate by means of its rings to the rings of the ephod, using a blue cord, so that it is above the intricately woven band of the ephod, and so that the breastplate does not come loose from the ephod. So Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of judgment over his heart when he goes into the holy place as a memorial before the Lord continually. And you shall put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be over Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Lord. So Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel over his heart before the Lord continually. You shall make the robe of the ephod all of blue. There shall be an opening for his head in the middle of it. It shall have a woven binding all around its opening, like the opening in a coat of mail, so that it does not tear. And upon its hem you shall make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet, all around its hem, and bells of gold between them all around. A golden bell and a pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate, upon the hem of the robe all around. And it shall be upon Aaron when he ministers, and its sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place before the Lord, and when he comes out, that he may not die. You shall also make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, like the engravings of a signet, holiness to the Lord. And you shall put on a blue cord, that it may be on the turban. It shall be on the front of the turban, so it shall be on Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may bear the iniquity of the holy things which the children of Israel hallow in all their holy gifts. And it shall always be on his forehead, that they may be accepted before the Lord. You shall skillfully weave the tunic of fine linen thread. You shall make the turban of fine linen, and you shall make the sash of woven work. For Aaron's sons you shall make tunics, and you shall make sashes for them, and you shall make hats for them for glory and beauty. So you shall put them on Aaron your brother, and on his sons with him. You shall anoint them, consecrate them, and sanctify them, that they may minister to me as priests. And you shall make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness. They shall reach from the waist to the thighs. They shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they come into the tabernacle of meeting, or when they come near the altar to minister in the holy place, that they do not incur iniquity and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and his descendants after him.
A lot of stuff, huh? How important is it? Now remember, put yourself in the shoes for just a moment. And in Moses' shoes right now. Okay, what's this all about? What do you think it's all about? What?
He said it's honor and beauty.
Honor and beauty, okay. Anything else? What do you find so... let's put it this way. Unusual. Different. Okay, let's do this way. What do you find interesting? Okay.
He divided up the two sections of Israel before they were even divided. He had half on one side and half on the other, and they were separate in two parts.
Evenly separated, however.
He had the names of Israel twice. On the high priest outfit, on the shoulders, and over the heart, represented both in stone, but in two different ways.
Okay. Guess what this is? All right, let's talk about the altar. All right, we're in chapter 27, right? Remember we measured, had a little game playing here, how big the ark was. It was really small, wasn't it? Okay. You know, and Aaron's rod was in it. So Aaron's rod wasn't this big, huge, giant staff. It was very short. Got to fit inside that rod. I mean, the rod had to sit. It wasn't his staff, it was his rod. We will get to Aaron's rod when it occurs. Please don't run ahead of me on that one. You probably already have an idea what it's all about. Now, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. That is 7.5 feet. Where is that? I don't know if I can get that high. 7.5. Where is it? There's the 6 right there. Okay. I can barely get it. Okay, that's how high the altar was. And how wide it was. No, not high. I'm saying in its length. I'm sorry. Its length. It's 7.5 by 7.5, and its height was how high? 4.5 feet. So we're at 4.5 feet. The reason why I'm doing this, because I hope to kind of let you know what it kind of pictured, what it kind of looked like, at least in a rectangular shape or square shape, and its height. And it had 4 horns on it. Each one of those had a horn, each corner, and the horns had to be covered with what? The whole thing had to be gold. No, bronze. This is the bronze. Why? Because you got to put fire in there. You got to have. You don't just use gold there. You got to use something that can take the heat. So we use the bronze. And so it's kind of interesting. Now, all the pans and all the utensils, all the things that belong to it, also had to be made of bronze.
Is bronze the same as brass? My
no,
is the brass.
No, brass is an alloy of copper. Copper is the main thing. All right. Daniel probably could ask that question better.
Copper is the base of both bronze and brass.
Right.
It is the main metal.
That's the main
metal. The difference between bronze and brass is the submetals added to it. Brass is a little bit softer than bronze is, and bronze is a little more brittle.
Right.
But bronze handles heat much better, and is more durable than brass is.
Right, okay. I knew, so you had the answer, right? The reason why I didn't hook that down, because I knew he's going to be here, he's going to have to answer that question. But, you know, so have you to know that bronze is definitely stronger, more durable. When you make a part from bronze, it's going to last. Okay? Now, also the poles had been made of acacia wood, but also had to be covered with bronze so they could pick this thing up. Now, man, that's a pretty big, huge altar. So you imagine the rods had to be pretty good, husky rods, okay? The wood had to be pretty good diameter in order that two men could pick it up. I don't know how much it weighed. It was hollow. I mean, it was not full. It was hollow all the way down. So it's just square and a certain height. So get a picture of kind of how those things were. It says it was hollow. Verse 8 says it was hollow. Now, verse 9, it's a very interesting beginning. Now, the next thing had to come in line was called the court of the tabernacle. Now, in this particular court of the tabernacle, he's saying on the south side, there shall be hangings of the court made of fine woven linen, 100 cubits for one side. That's 150 feet, and for you women, it's 50 yards. That's a good. What's the average bolt? 120 yards per bolt. 20 yards per bolt. Okay, so it's quite a bit of bolts getting here, right? You got. That is modern counting of bolts today, right? Now, the funny thing, you know, since my wife has been becoming more and more knowledgeable and active in linen, I find that it's very fascinating that linen is the number one subject matter throughout these things, and he has what's called fine woven linen. Not just woven linen, but fine woven linen. Ellie, could you possibly explain what that means?
Fine woven linen is the threads are all even. regular woven linen has slubs. It has the thread gets larger, smaller, larger, smaller, because they're taking the flax and winding it together. So if it's fine, all the threads are small and the same size.
Same size. So what should it mean? Everything we read here has to be fine woven linen with the possibility, not the trousers. We'll get to there later. Remember the trousers? So, this thing is 150 feet on the, of course, the south side, 150 feet on the west, I mean on the north side, and it is 75 feet or 25 yards north and, I mean, east and west. So that's how big the thing was. 150 feet long and 75 feet wide. Pretty good size, right? So we have a picture of kind of what it looks like. Okay. Now, on verse 14, one more thing has to be added to this court of the tabernacle. By the way, before I go any farther, what is a court? Now, you heard of the court of the Gentiles, and you heard the court of the women, then you heard the court of inside the temple, right? What does that mean? You're close. Basically, it means that which is measured out. That's all it means. And this particular one is measured for a particular reason. And in this court, things will occur. What's inside this court, of course, is the altar. That's the first thing that it'd make. And now we have to make a court to put the altar there. Okay? And of course, talk about the 20 pillars and 20 sockets and so on and so forth. They were made out of two things. They were made out of bronze, and of silver. That is, the hooks are made out of silver, but the sockets are made out of bronze. So they had the strength of the bronze and the beauty of the hooks, of the silver, things that would hang on and hook onto the sockets. Yes?
Richard, if they were in the wilderness, where'd they get the shittim wood?
It doesn't tell us. I would assume they brought it with them.
Oh.
See, we don't think when we see Sesame DeMille's out there, we see them running for their lives, scared to death, terrified, not realizing that they were carrying an awful lot of stuff. Yes.
Usually God has us use the things we have, and gold and silver was donated from the people. Why would there not be that particular kind of wood growing there?
Well, we're talking in Sinai. There's not that much around that place.
Well, there's not that much now, but
no,
there were
there
forests.
Wasn't anything. The whole thing, the water, there was nothing to drink. No, nothing for anybody. No food, no nothing. And the rock had to be opened up to let the water through. So they had to either carry it with them or bring it with them.
Scrub oak?
I'm sorry, what?
Something? There had to be something.
Well, I'm not saying, what I'm saying is, if they had to cut down a tree, they also had to make the timber out of it. But what if they already had the timber? Now, sometimes we assume, and it took them a year to do this. Yes?
There is acacia wood today on Sinai.
I'm sorry, what?
There is acacia wood growing today in the Sinai area.
Sinai Peninsula? Well, no, we're not there. We're over there in Arabia.
Not the peninsula. The real Mount Sinai.
Yeah. Well, I've seen the pictures of them coming down. Nothing there.
Okay.
I'm just telling you what I think. Okay. Yeah. So they chopped down some trees. They made some timber. Okay. Let's go on with the story then. Okay. I find it very difficult for me to picture this that way, but that's just me. Okay. Yes.
I'm just stunned at the size of this. Dave just told me that wall is about 48 feet. So you're talking about three times as long as that wall.
Oh, yeah.
That's huge.
It's huge. That's a court of the tabernacle. This is what surrounds the inner tabernacle. They had to make the inner tabernacle. The outer tabernacle was the court of the tabernacle, which engulfed or had the all the things for it. We were described already how the inner tabernacle was made, right? We went through detail of how big it was, and now we have this one here, which is, yes.
They had wood fires, so they had to have some wood available, because they were building fires.
Right.
Well, they had to have something.
Okay. So they cut the tree down, they got timber. I planed it by hand, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to go there. I just try to picture how they could have done it. And I picture they probably had ability to do that, and perhaps they could do it quicker than modern times today could do it. Maybe they had the tools to plane. I don't know. I have no idea. Let's go on. All right. What's the next thing I want to talk about? Pillars? Oh, the tent. Okay, there had to be a curtain in front of the opening. All right? That particular curtain had a certain size. See, where was that? With the east side, south side, on the one side of the gate. Okay, hangings on one side of the gates, a gate, shall be 50 cubits with their pillars, and that is 22 and a half feet by 7, by 22 and a half feet, or 7 and a half yards. And the other side, same thing, 22 and a half feet by 7 and a half, or 7 and a half yards. Now the gate of the court to be a screen of 30 cubits long. Is it 30? 20. How long is that? Thirty feet, or 10 yards. That's how big it is. 30 feet, pretty good size, you know. That's what's. And of course, they had the hooks and the silver, bronze, and brass. Same description it was before about hanging the outer court or hanging the curtain in the outer court. So the court technically was 150 feet by 75 and 7.5 feet high. That's how big it is, 7.5 feet high. Remember, it was like the court 7.5 feet high, you know. So it's just a little bit taller. Just a little bit taller than you, right? Not very many are much taller than that, but, you know, kind of funny to. Oh, by the way, remember how high the ark was? Oh, how high was it?
7.75.
Huh?
7.75.
Twenty-seven inches high. All right. I'll go after something. It's a little shorter than the table. That's where he sat. Now, when you think about it, men sit down. You know, you generally sit down, and your feet are on the floor. So, if God's sitting on the throne, he's got long feet. I'm just saying that, being smart. I have no idea. Maybe he had a footstool. But I just wanted to tell you, that's kind of funny. I thought about that. You know, wow, he must be a tall person, you know. But that's just my thinking for fun. All right, the meeting of the tabernacle outside the veil, which is before... Where are my markers? Last week, we learned what that word in Hebrew was. Remember what that word was? Ha! Ha, ha, ha. Okay. Ha! It's an ayin. A dalet. And what's the last one? A resh. I mean, not a resh, but a tet. How would you pronounce it? Oh, I'll help you with words. Get those dowels in there if I can see what they are. Yeah. How'd you pronounce that? Ha. A. Doot. Ha. A. Doot. Ha. A. Doot. Ha. A. Doot. That's the word for testimony. And what does testimony mean in that? You said it last week.
Witness.
That's the word for witness in Hebrew. Ha edut. Ha edut. Ha edut. So every time you see the word testimony in there, try to remember it's ha edut. Ha edut. Kind of interesting word. And all it means is witness. What was in the ark? What was he supposed to put in the ark first? The Ten Commandments. All right. They, the Ten Commandments, are called what? Ha-e-dut. Ha-e-dut. The commandments are called ha-e-dut. They are the testimony. And it technically is a witness. It can be for you or can be against you. And who sits upon the witness seat? We sit in our court, we sit on the witness seat, right? No, he sits on the witness seat. He sits there. He's got the evidence right there under his seat. Remember what I said last week about this? God also says, I will have heaven and earth to testify against you. That's pretty big stuff, right? We don't like when God says that, so we'll just ignore it, right? Sounds good. Now, there's another fascinating name. Yes. Well, I'm not too good at doing Hebrew. It's Aleph, a Hey, a Resh, and a Nun. No Dalet, no. What do you think it is? What does Ha'aro mean? All right. The name Aaron is a very, very fascinating name. There are a lot of people have tried to figure out what it means. It comes from a source. One of the many definitions has to do with that who brings forth. The Aleph is a leader, right? And the Hay is what? Praise. But the picture of what? A picture of man with the hands up in the air. So I'm going to draw a picture of man. And it has to do with praise. So strong, praise, and resh is, or that which brings forth, it's the head or the beginning of something. Right? And the noon is? Something is sprouting up. So his name means a strong leader, a man who's going to bring forth praise, and he's going to be the beginning of it, and he's going to spring something up. Well, now, Aaron represents whom? The Messiah. Now, what does it tell you about that name? It's a symbol representing something. One who's going to bring something up. Going to begin something sprouting up or beginning of something. One of the definitions of Aaron's name is light bringer. One that brings light. Now, why would he be the one that brings light? What was he supposed to do when the people, verse 20, thou shalt command the children of Israel that they bring thee pure oil of pressed olives for the light, and cause the lamp to burn continually. The tabernacle meeting outside the veil, which is before the testimony, Aaron and his sons shall tend to it from evening until night. So his name means the one that brings forth the light. He is responsible for the light always burning. Right? That's the simplicity of his name. That's why one of the definitions is the bringer of the light. The people bring the oil, right? He uses the oil to light the menorah. Fascinating, isn't it? So his name is kind of a unique name, isn't it? The one that brings something up. He's the first one. He's the beginning of it, because no one else is supposed to do it except Aaron, and Aaron was the first one to do it. So it's kind of interesting with his name, right? And he was a powerful leader. He wasn't a weak-kneed individual that had no character. Remember, it was his rod that did an awful lot of damage in Egypt. So, isn't that interesting to learn? Something different. All right. Now, chapter 28. It's a little bit long. I'll go through it relatively fast. Had some highlights. It's about the garment. This whole chapter is about the garment that the light bringer is to wear. All right? Having to think it in the realm of the Messiah, now you begin to see the beauty of the outer appearance of the Messiah. And what his function is, what he's supposed to do. As we go in farther into Leviticus, into Numbers, we'll go in more detail about the job of Aaron. But right now, we're only going to see the garments. And the first thing is first description of it, it'll be for beauty and for glory, or for glory and for beauty. I have fulfilled within the spirit of wisdom. On our modern English, we would say, you have a gift. God gives you an individual gift that you can do. Now, what do you do when God gives you a gift? You exercise it. Now, put it out of the spirit of God out of you for just a minute. Every human being that's ever walked the face of this earth has a gift. Everyone. Ever heard the term a gift for gab? Right? Now, you could use the gift of speaking for evil, or you could use the gift of speaking for good. But still a gift. If you had the gift of making garments, like my wife, you could have a gift that comes almost like natural to her. Her line of family, it just comes. The baking things, the doing it, changing people's clothes, it comes natural to her. But if she didn't do it, then what would happen to her? That gift would be of no value. It goes into nothing. But she exercised in it, and she had her own business in it. You understand what I'm saying? We're all talking just about the flesh now. Don't go off into some kind of, the spirit of gift of this, the spirit of gift. No, we're talking about something that he gave to this physical people. Every person in this room has a gift prior to salvation. God does not create human beings in vain. He created them in order that they will produce, they will make things, they'll create things, they do things. So we have this ability. You each one of you say, I don't have a gift, but yes, you do. You really, really, really do. You may not look at it because you're looking for the spiritual one. No, forget about the spiritual one. Do the physical one. When you do the physical one, the spiritual one will become known. Everything that is physical can be seen in the spirit world. If you're waiting for the spirit world to give you a gift, it's not coming. It's not coming. You have to exercise that gift that God gave you now in the flesh. Then He can increase that. He can add to it. He can give you more. But if you don't exercise what you have the gift of, why would He use you? Why did He give you something that you're not going to use? He's a builder. He knows how to build. It comes natural to Him. He has to work at it, of course. But it comes natural to Him. Me? I have to work at it. I'm not a good builder. Even though I did do my house. Now there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things that He said must be made. What's the first thing that had to be made? It's called a breastplate. What is a breastplate? Okay. Now, He describes how big this breastplate is. How big is it? A hand span, which is approximately 9 inches. I measured my hand out. It only goes to 8.5. He probably measured out, maybe go to 10.5. You know, but I'm saying it's a hand span, or basically 0.5 cubic, to make it simple. And so it was a square, but it says it was double. So it was doubled. Oh, why was it doubled for? On the outside, there were certain stones, right? All 12 in a certain row. Four rows, he read off the colors. But there was something that had to go inside of that. What went inside of it? The Urim and the Thummim. They were small. About 8 inches, maybe less than 8 inches high. They fit inside the pocket of that breastplate. I have no idea. One means lights. The other means righteousness. Plurality. Urim means lights, plural. And Thurim or Turim means righteousness. Plurality. More than just one righteous. A lot of righteous people. So bringer forth of lights and the bringer forth of righteousness. That's what was inside that in that square of 9 by 9. Approximately 9 by 9. And had gold chains. We go down the store, you know, ladies buy a gold necklace, you know. Well, this one here is gold date. It had hooks on it. And hooked underneath the ephod, which we'll get to there. And it hooked on the top, over the top, outer garment of this breastplate. Now, what is the breastplate called? Breastplate of judgment. That's a big word, isn't it? Breastplate of judgment. The next thing that had to be made was the ephod. What's an ephod? What's an ephod? It's an outer garment. Okay. That's all it is. It's like a shirt. Okay? And there was a robe, which is a bigger one, and covered over all that. But there's also a thing called a sash. What's a sash? He read sash. What is it? It's called a girdle or a belt. Now, the shirt had to go down just a little bit past the hips. And it was ruffled. I use that word, ruffled. And the belt was held in place. So the belt held the shirt in place, not the trousers. Held the shirt in place. Okay? Now, the tunic or the headpiece. Oh, I got to go here. This is very fair. The turban. The tunic, rather, is the garment with the sleeves. It's like a hip length. I'm sorry. And it was worn. That was actually the shirt thing. Let's go to the turban. What's a turban? What kind of headgear is this one? This headpiece can only be worn by a king or a priest, high priest. It's not an ordinary thing that wraps around your head. It's not a little kippah on top of your head. You're not allowed to wear those things. What does that special turban represent that only kings or priests can wear? What does it represent? Royalty, authority, all right. One who is in position to do the job. No one else was allowed to do it. Now, we have in the United States Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, and everybody else. Now, the higher the rank you are, your cap is different than anybody else's, right? It's got more we call eggshell on it, right? Sooner the GI knows a lot of eggshell on, you know he's boss. You know, no one else can wear that one. Only he can wear that one because he's the one that has the authority to do something, and he gives you command, and then therefore you carry it out. Not an ordinary person gets to wear one of those things in the military. All right? So it kind of tells you a little bit about this special one. Now it's funny. Go down to verse 5. I hope to get this thing finished here. Now, remember the outer tabernacle, the tabernacle round that he had made for the sanctuary? It was blue, purple, and scarlet. This one's got gold, blue, purple, and scarlet, and fine linen. That's four threads. Don't you think that's interesting? Four threads. One of them is gold. This basically is used in a lot of places like the belt or the hem. It's called the hem or the outer section. It's like, I would call it, as they call it, like a serger. I bought my wife a serger. It's a four-thread serger. Of course, that's with a sewing machine. Okay. This is special weaved. Now, one thing that my wife, Carmel, has discovered that fine linen thread, quote, is expensive, end of quote. $75 for one cone. That's quite expensive. Now, so you look at all the garments and all things made, he wants out of that kind of thread, you know, this was a very expensive outfit. One of the cheapest one online, it was very expensive. This one had to have those four colors. Only the priest was to have those colors. You as an individual are not to have those colors because it stood out like a uniform. He's the boss. All right? That's what all this garment's about. Well, I don't go into too much detail today, but to have you understand a little bit about the breastplate of judgment. And it has to be of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, fine with woven thread. So that little square thing was specially designed, special colors with those four threads, and they had to have the four rows of stones. I do want to clarify something, though. It says here, verse 11, it says, with the work of an engraver in stone, make the engravings of a signet. Thou shalt engrave two stones with the names of the sons of Israel, and set them setting. What does it mean when you set a signet? What's a signet? You know, who had a signet?
King.
Okay, what one of the sons of Jacob, we already read about in the book of Exodus, had a signet which the lady kept? Judah. Signet what? Signet ring. That's how you gave a message across. So it wasn't the name of each one of the tribe. It was the signet, their symbol, their sign of each one of them. Each one of them had their own kind. And that was the engraved into the stone. Because it's only 9 by 9. 9 inches by 9 inches. You can't have the full name. Couldn't even pause it close to put it. But it does say signet. So keep that in mind. There are symbols of something. Now, there is a signet. Okay, let's move fast here quick. I want to go to the point. We won't run out of time. Verse 20. Verse 38. About the pomegranate outfit he had. You know, how many colors were there? Pomegranate. Verse 33. Upon the hem or the outer garment at the edge, thou shalt make pomegranates of purple, of blue, purple, and scarlet, and bells of gold. Now, there was this blue pomegranate, then there was this gold bell. Right next to it, the next was a purple, and then a gold bell. The next one was a red, and then a gold bell. It kept going all the way around the garment. All right, now the bells were real. They were there for him to what? So he goes into the holy place, and he comes out of the holy place, they would be heard. So both in and out. But he says, thou shalt, verse 36, thou shalt also make a plate of pure gold and engrave it on it like the engraving of a signia or a seal, like a signet ring. And it says, what? Kodesh La Yahweh. It was a signet, it's a symbol. That's what was there. What would the symbol look like? I haven't got the slightest idea. What would the signet look like? I haven't got the slightest idea. It doesn't tell us. But it was a signet, a symbol of that. When you saw it, that's what it meant. Those words tells you what it meant. Because now he tells you this is what it's all about.
In 1 Peter, I believe, 1 or 2 Peter, it talks about how the, I think it was, he was talking to those that were dispersed, you know, to the tribes that were dispersed. And he says that you were once, you know, low on me, but now you are called, you know, sons of God again. You know, he's bringing them back through faith in the Messiah, he's saying. And he says you are a kingdom of priests. And so, you know, a holy nation, okay. Blah blah blah. So
go ahead.
I don't know. I'm just wondering. I've heard that verse like my whole life. You know, just we are
a king. In the book of Revelation, it talks about a stone with a name on it, and it gives it to you.
Mm-hmm.
That is your signet. That's who you are. That's what you become from that point on. So
are we priests now, or are we going to be
when
priests?
He does his final job? It's not now.
Because it seemed like it was present tense. It was talking present tense. You are priests. Okay.
Yeah, we are, but we're not yet. It's like when Daniel went through the King David. Anointed king, much, much younger. He was still to be called king, but not a king. And after even the death of Saul, what did David do? Daniel explained it. He did nothing. He waited. He waited until God says, now take the kingship. So yeah, anointed a long time ago, as a young kid, young lad. But, yeah, he was king, but not yet. We are the same boat. We are kings, but not yet. We're priests, but not yet. Our king is the Messiah, and our priest is the Messiah. Therefore, we respond to him and answer to him. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Having that authority is very, very large. All right. Any questions?
What is that?
32. Let me get to 32. Having 32. The what was the word?
Habergoin.
I don't have that in this translation. What is it? It's what?
Corselet. Like a corselet. I suppose like a corset. Yes. Some version of it. A girdle. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it says about that thing about the garment going, it has a hole in it, and you had to bind it up. You bind it up. I mean, that's logical. I mean, that's what surgeons do for material. They put a hem around it or binding around it so it doesn't, your material no longer frays. It's a binding around the neck. Around the neck. Now, most men who have women, even if you have a pullover shirt or pullover, you got a binding there that holds the thing together because it's going to fall apart otherwise if it's not. Yes.
Oh, I was going to say back to the thing about being kings and priests and King David. You know, if you look at the time of his life from when he was anointed as a boy to when he became king, it was, you know, one trial after another. You know, such as similar with us, it seems. You know, we've been given, okay, you know, can be an inheritance for you, but this time is a trial to see if we will walk therein, so say.
We have to kind of, the reason why, I mean, the man after God's own heart. I mean, you got to listen to the heart of God. That's what it boiled down to. I mean, the simplicity of the terminology, that's how I look at it. You want a heart of God, and you got to listen to the heart of God. How do you listen to the heart of God? What does he say? He's going to tell you what he says. Then you know him. Then you know what he thinks. You know what he has to add. Yes.
But it's not just hearing it, it's doing it. Because he says, don't just be a hearer of the word. Do it.
But you
right?
Do wear the word. Right.
Hear and obey.
Right.
Okay.
If you love me, you will do what? I want one more statement here. I forgot. It's not the linen trousers. Here, the Hebrew does not say fine linen. This probably is not the fine linen. It's probably the coarser linen. And it was, well, from the hips down to the knees. Like we would call a pair of shorts today. We call them short. Daniel's got a pair of those on him right now. That's what it's called, thong, and they'd be made out of linen. Okay, anything else? We went through this pretty fast, but an awful lot of detail. Yes.
Another question about the priest thing. We have so many friends that are in this movement right now where they call themselves, you know, they really take it literally that we are priests, and they pray and they intercede for people, and they just really believe that strongly.
What is the object of a priest? What's the job of a priest?
To intercede for the people.
Go between.
No.
Niche, 99, low, low.
Offer gifts.
That's it. They're supposed to offer gifts. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to tell you what you should give. Let God do that. What you give to them, if it's not what God wants, they cannot take it. So you want to be a priest? Someone gives them, says, oh, give this to God. He says, no, sorry. Go find out what God wants you to give. And he will.
What will the role be, though, in the millennium for the priest?
The same picture. When we get in more into the priesthood here, the same function, the book of Leviticus, the same function will be done. You must give certain things to God, not anything you want. And giving, making the tabernacle, certain things he said to give. Nothing else. All right. See, sometimes we live in a world where it's good things we should give gifts to God. However, we should ask God, do you want it? And if he says no, what are you supposed to do? Bawl? Weep? Cry? Or you say, oh, what is it you want? That's what you do.
Does this fit that illustration? Just the whole Cain and Abel? You know, Cain brought a certain gift and Abel brought a different one. One was pleasing to the Lord, one was not, right?
One was of lesser value and was not what God wanted. That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Ellen, it's getting late.
Was not one of the main jobs of the priesthood to teach the truth of God to the people? And then... I think it's in Isaiah. I can't find it, but I've got it marked in here somewhere. Where it says in the millennium that two people will be walking along and they'll be discussing a no good thing, and they'll hear a voice behind them saying, "This is the way. Don't walk out of it. You walk in it."
Correct.
Well, to me, is that not the job of a priest saying, "Don't walk outside of this path"?
It's and also was that the job not of the king? Also, job of king, right. Sounds the same thing. A king can give a warning.
King and priest, both of their jobs would be to say, The Lord doesn't change. He said the same yesterday, today, tomorrow. This is his path. This is his path. Walk in it.
So what you do with the priest then, you must tell the people what God wants.
What this says.
Simple as that. It's not that complicated.
Thank you.
But you as a priest must know what God wants. Before you go to the people and says, this is what God wants from you. All right? Can I explain what I'm saying to you? Anything you give to God, we're talking about giving a gift to God, you must be what God says. Jeff.
Which is why the Apostle Paul gave another term for it, calling it an ambassador.
Okay.
So it's another description of the same role, where you're representing what God wants to represent, and the only way you can represent him accurately is to represent accurately what he says. And not twist it.
Don't assume you know what he says. You've got to find out what he says before you say what he says. One more statement. Don't answer it. How many times have you said, well, God spoke to me and he said? Ooh. Where did he say it? When did he say it? Did he say it in Jeremiah? Did he say it in Isaiah? That makes sense.